Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross, and it is a Thursday, the third day of April for 2014. Today, we're going to talk jazz. We're going to talk not blue, not purple, not orange, but red Molly. We're going to hear about an open mic for writers to read their stuff. We're going to begin with a recap of the Confluence Project, simply because it was featured several times over past years and months here on Spectrum West. The Confluence now pulling out into the intersection with a green light provided by the voters of Eau Claire and Eau Claire County. I was at the offices for growth. I was at the Voices for Growth Election Central. That's it, not offices. Anyway, Tuesday evening, I ran into James Hankey, the economic development specialist, who appeared here a couple times during the campaign process. I asked that he summarize his thoughts given Tuesday's positive outcome.
You know, I think in a lot of ways, the opposition to the project was a great opportunity for those of us who have been involved in this over the course of the last couple of years and those of us who have supported it to really sharpen the pencil and really do a critical analysis of the value proposition we're providing the community and make sure that it makes sense. I think in a lot of ways this is a recognition that we need to do things a little bit differently. It's a recognition that partnerships matter. So when the university comes to the community and offers a value proposition that everybody can account to, I think that you listen. What I anticipate as a result of this is a continuance of something that we've been very successful with, you know, here within our region, and that's broader regional collaboration. I think the energy of all the people that were involved in this is going to continue going forward. It's been a rallying cry for a lot of people. You know, I've said it a number of times. I think I said it on your show. We view this as a catalyst for economic growth in the downtown area. And I do. I think that a lot of people are going to continue to put energy and focus into revitalizing the core of our community and making this an attractive place for people to live, work, and play. It feels really good, and I'm happy with where we're at, but there's a lot more work to do. We need to position the state of Wisconsin to provide the support to UWEC to make this happen. We need to position the philanthropic community to provide the support that's necessary to make this thing go forward. Those are obstacles. We need to work. While this feels good and it's a lot of fun, we got a long way to go.
And so it goes. Thanks to everyone who got involved and all of you who cast votes and exercised the best part of the democratic ideal. Spectrum West, Friday, begins the big 47th annual Eau Claire Jazz Festival. Although there are a bunch of these things all across America, this is one of the best. It's a year-long process of getting things lined up and getting things straight and systematic. Lots of people putting in lots of hours, including a board of directors headed by its president, Mark Blaski, who stopped by on the threshold of yet another festival. What leads up to this weekend? I mean, I'm curious, and I'm sure a lot of other people are, about what goes on behind the scenes weeks and months before the Eau Claire Jazz Festival, because it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Lots of planning. We have a very active board of directors and very impressive set of about 10 interns from UW Eau Claire who run a lot of the day-to-day operations. Very impressive. They do a lot of the marketing, the management, handling the contracts with the guest artists, scheduling, facility management, lighting, sound.
Oh, really?
We're just there for kind of general over-the-top, the board of directors of Eau Claire Jazz, over-the-top management.
Are there a lot of last-minute things to do, or do you like to have it all buttoned down prior?
Well, I was emailing people at 1:30, 2 o'clock this morning. Yes, there are a number of last-minute things. Oh, yes.
I was going to say you look a little peaked. According to my calculations, 1967 was the first.
Yes, this is the 47th annual. I hope our math agrees. Yes, it does.
Any idea what that first one was like?
I don't know.
Who ran that? Who started it?
Ron Keyser and John Buckles started that.
Ron gets the credit,
and John. Okay. They wanted to start some little jazz programs here, and they put on a little festival, and it would be good. We need to talk to Ron and get that early history. How many bands came in and performed? Were they adjudicated? Were there guest artists? When did that start? Somebody with the 50-year retrospective coming up, Al, you being the writer, that would be a project for you.
I'll try to remember that. How long have you been a fan, personally, of the Eau Claire Jazz Festival?
Since I moved here in 1979, I started going to the concerts at Memorial or at Zorn in those days, or pop into some of the free stuff. I'm an old jazz lover from way back, so it was easy to me to watch. And then about 5-6 years ago, I got involved with this Eau Claire Jazz management situation.
On this same program coming up, we have an interview with Wycliffe Gordon. I had a chance to speak with him. Quite an accomplished trombonist. We get into the fact that the trombone is tough to play.
It's tough to play, but it's one of the few instruments, as I understand it, and I'm out of my league here, that you can tune perfectly because you've got that adjustable slide. In theory, you could always be perfectly in tune on every note.
Perfectly. But I asked him if it was tougher to play because there are no valves like other brass instruments. Like a violin with no frets.
Yes. Does he play any other brass instruments?
He didn't say.
I bet he plays piano. I know Jeff Keyser always says, all I do is play piano. But every time I go meet another artist, plays saxophone, trombone, they'll play their instrument and then sit down and play the piano beautifully. And it kind of frustrates
him. Well, he does play the piano. I've seen it on his website. I think that's what he uses when he composes, which a lot of people do. The other thing that I likened the trombone to was an expensive slide whistle. I mean, what kid doesn't like a slide whistle?
Sure, it's just a slide whistle on steroids.
And the other headliner is?
Byron Stripling,
who is
a trumpet player, plays like Louis Armstrong. He played Louis Armstrong in an off-off Broadway production, so he can sing and entertain like Louis. And if it weren't for Louis, none of us would be here talking jazz. That is the starting point of it all.
And we've brought up now the two headliners, but that's just tip of the iceberg, because under that is so much more stuff going on.
So much more stuff. I just want to add one little thing about the two headliners. We've heard in the past, tremendous artists here who are great players, but not necessarily effusive or entertaining. And these two gentlemen were brought in not only because they're the best at what they do, but they're also entertaining on stage and know that there's entertainment value, not just music value, that's important to the audience.
Tell me about the stuff behind the scenes now. Obviously, 52nd Street, that's a big deal, too.
That is a big deal. It's the third time we've had 52nd Street, and that's an idea of Bob Baca's, who wanted to recreate the 40s, 50s jazz atmosphere of 52nd Street in Manhattan, New York City, where you could go either as a player or a patron from club to club to club to club to club and hear different music. If you're a player, you can sit in with different bands during the night. So we're recreating that on South Barstow Street for the third time. This is the first time, thanks to Royal Credit Union, we've been able to pay the bands. Fortunately, we have great musicians in this town who knew we were building something in the last 2 years, played for free. Now we're going to pay them. We're also going to charge a $5 fee, all venues, all night long. We have 9 venues starting at 4 o'clock at the L.E. Phillips Library, a free show. No wristband, no admission required there. And so they've got a nice jazz display going there, and it runs till 2 a.m. at the Stone's Throw. 30 bands, 9 venues, all night long. It's like the weather. If you don't like what you're hearing, go next door to the Clancy's or the Mousetrap or Hooligans or Pizza Plus or Acoustic Cafe, the Firehouse.
I did that a couple of years ago. That was a lot of fun.
The venues have been packed in the past. I tried to get in a Stone's Throw at midnight last year, and absolutely they were at capacity. Nobody was going in.
Mark Blaski with us. He's president of the board, the Eau Claire Jazz, Inc., and we are specifically talking about this weekend's 47th Annual Jazz Festival, the Eau Claire Jazz Festival. Jump, jive, and read for the little guys.
For the little guys, right. We serve everybody from 5 years old and to 105 years old. And Jump, Jive, and Read is taking place 9 o'clock Saturday morning in Davies Center, put on by our member of our board of directors, Toni Pohl Sorensen, and her interns. Oh, cool. And it's slated for about 5 and 6, 7-year-olds. There's a live band. Toni teaches some dance moves, and then they read a story at the same time and try and reenact that story through dance and through the music. It's a great integration of things, and that's free.
Start them early.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of young people, adolescents, have their hopes up for staying good jazz musicians. You have over 100 middle, high school, college bands.
We're pushing 120, 125 as of this moment from about 80 different schools.
So and this is a big weekend for them. What do they get? Trophies? Ribbons?
For the top placing. But it's really about teaching. This is our education arm, because the band will come into a room and play a couple of tunes, and then the adjudicators will go work with them, maybe show the drummer one little different technique, or have a saxophone player play one passage, or have the whole ensemble play an 8-bar. And I've been in these rooms, and these adjudicators make big differences in 5 minutes. They are so skilled at what they do that everybody comes out. And not to say that the band directors aren't doing a great job. It's just these adjudicators are so skilled at teaching jazz in short periods of time that they make a big difference. They get inspired. They go watch a Byron Stripling or a Wycliffe Gordon or UWEC Jazz 1, something that might be more accessible to them in their goals. It's a stepping stone mentally for everybody.
Very similar to a team going to a tournament.
Except
on the weekend.
No losers. No. We're all winners here.
And you don't have to shower afterwards.
If you play very hard.
So who are the judges?
Generally, they are professional musicians and teachers and clinicians themselves. Some of them are band directors in other school districts. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like Greg Keel's a professional musician, UWEC graduate. He's gigging in the cities for 30 years.
Yep. Puts on that camp up in Shell Lake.
Yes, right. I just corresponded at 1:30 this morning with Victor Barranco, one of our adjudicators, who is from Washington, D.C., and he plays in one of the military bands. He's an adjudicator all around the country. So these are people of high order.
So it's that time of day that you have to communicate with musicians? Is that what you're telling me? So you just stay up?
I've completely rearranged my schedule.
There are some pretty tired people at the end of this weekend, I'll bet.
Lead interns are really working very hard. Yeah. And we have to keep in mind, as we're trying to get work out of them, that they're also students. For example, they have exams and papers due this weekend amongst all this management they're having to do. It's a push.
Is that what they're basically students of? You know, like business management? They're not music people, necessarily.
No, they're not music majors. You're right. Okay. These are business management, communications, journalism, sure. PR, graphics, design.
Wow. Everybody benefits all the way around on this weekend.
Well, that's right. It's our mission to give a little mentorship to these students, too, as they're interning and running the jazz festival. We bring some business management expertise to them.
It's also wonderful that your corporation, Eau Claire Jazz, Inc., is a partner with the university.
Oh.
That shows people what can be done when you partner with a university. Then
this was started in 2008. The chancellor at the time came to the Bob Bach with this idea to set up this nonprofit corporation to help export music and jazz in particular from the university out into the community. And it's now a six-year-old partnership. And we are absolutely strategically aligned with the university. They provide us some facilities and phones and these kind of things.
Great.
But we're a separate nonprofit corporation. We don't get any funding from the university. We
have amazing what can be done when people work together, isn't it?
It is.
Wonderful. I know your background as a trumpet player, and I know that you played in the Badger marching band, but were you into jazz, too?
Some of my earliest memories are my mother's Tommy Dorsey records and Harry James and Hi-Fi that we had on... Of course,
sure.
On vinyl, that went on the hi-fi and went around and around and around. Listened to a lot of Harry James.
Vinyl?
Vinyl.
I'm pretending like I don't know.
You're such a young guy.
I have lots of albums. And you know what? There's nothing better than seeing those things live, and you can do that this weekend.
Yes, indeed. All over town. Barstow, Memorial High School, Friday and Saturday nights. And the clinics are free, too. If you want to come in at 3 o'clock to Davies Center on Friday or Saturday afternoons, Byron Stripling and Wycliffe Gordon are giving master classes. They're free. Just walk in, and they're explaining their art to the students and to the public.
So the performances by these high school and middle school and whatever groups, those are you can witness as well?
Absolutely. All that's free, too. And a lot of parents and relatives come in and watch their kids play.
Do we have to pack a lunch?
You can eat right there in the Davies Center.
You can.
Oh, it's good food.
Oh, good. A little bird told me that these ensembles at the university are some of the best they've had.
I've heard probably from the same bird that you have, that in the course of 25 or 30 years, they've had some outstanding ensembles who've won Grammy Awards, of course.
Yes.
But he is very proud of this one in particular.
So now the headlining shows we're going to see are the guest artists backed by the...
UWEC Jazz Ensemble 1, correct. And the warm-up bands, if you will, are some of the winning bands from earlier on the day. On Friday, it's college combos who come in and are adjudicated and then perform Friday night at the concert. Saturday night, it's middle school and high schools come in, and the best of the best are featured in a tune or two that evening before the headliners come out. And the headliners will end up playing with each other, too, as well, with UWEC Jazz Ensemble 1. And in the past, that turned into some really fun times. There's been conga lines going up and down the aisles of Memorial High School in the past.
I missed that. Wow.
Bobby Sanabria, drummer, a couple years ago, really got the crowd whipped up.
Had the chance to talk with him as well. You go to the concert Friday night, and then you go down to Barstow Street.
That's the intent. Barstow Street starts really around 5 o'clock. You can start going to the Acoustic Cafe or Pizza Plus, but you could go to the headlining concert, be out at 10, and go down to Barstow till 2 a.m.
What's the Guinness record for longest conga line? Memorial High School to South Barstow. Think about it.
That'd be a mile or two. I think
it's worth a shot.
Now, next year, we're going to be about 2 weeks later due to the schedule. So we might have better weather, warmer. Yes, then we'll do the conga line.
Who needs warm weather when you've got hot jazz? Can I coin that line?
We're done.
Always fun, Mark Blaski. Coming up, reading what you've written and why Cliff Gordon. He plays the trombone for a living, and that's a good way to describe what he's doing when he plays. Really living. Coming up on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from the Eau Claire Jazz Festival, featuring trumpeter and Louis Armstrong impersonator Byron Stripling and trombonist Wycliffe Gordon, April 4th and 5th. Festival details and venues are available at eauclairejazz.com.
Here's a Spectrum memo. Remember, you have only until April 10th, that's next Thursday, to view the current pieces in place as part of the sculpture tour in Eau Claire. In coming weeks, we'll feature a segment on what's coming as replacements. Well, the Writers Read series is a popular monthly get-together at the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire, and Eau Claire's poet laureate Bruce Taylor is behind it, beginning to end. There's an event next week and another in May. We thought you might like to hear about them because I expect there are a lot of people listening right now who've written something they'd like to try out on an appreciative audience. I was thinking as I was preparing to talk to you, you're the poet laureate, and I was wondering if there's ever a poet lariat.
I think so, but only in the western states.
Yeah.
It has to be cowboy poetry.
Become proficient at, who's that cowboy poet? Baxter Black.
Yeah, he's a hoot. I met him one time and actually read with him one time. And he autographed a book for me. So
I was revealed to him back in the 80s when he first became a phenomenon. Is he still doing it?
This is maybe about 5 years ago that I saw him, so I don't know.
So there's a name we toss out. People should look him up. I thought it prudent to allow you to talk about the upcoming Writers Read event because this one is an open mic, and there might be someone out there listening who's always had it in the back of their head to, you know, grab their binders and their legal pads and their notebooks and their journals and read their stuff. So this is your opportunity to urge them on.
Well, come on down. It's at the library, of course, the second Tuesday. This will be the 8th. Starts at 7, but if you already know you want to read, you might come a little early and hit our sign-up sheet, maybe 6:45 or so. But if you're not sure, come on down and tuck something in your back pocket just in case you're inspired, you're moved to get up there and testify.
So that's it. You just have to sign up.
Yep, that's it. The way we usually run it is that we give the readers about 5 minutes the first time just to make sure everybody gets in. And then if there's still some time left over, we start over again with anybody that wants to read some more.
Do you keep going to facilitate everybody? Let's say it's packed.
Well, that's never happened. But, you know, we can go as late as probably 8:30. And that's always been plenty of time so far. I mean, you know, people show some restraint. I know there's some people that could get up there and read for the whole hour and a half, but they don't. So.
I'm guessing that you have been there, I mean, you're there all the time, at a time when someone who may have been the wallflower type, you know, just was reluctant to do it up until that point, and then just said, heck with it, I'm going up there and doing it, and then they come off the stage and they're a new person. Have you ever seen that?
Well,
I can't wait to do this again.
That kind of a change, but it is, you know, we have many, many first-time readers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, you know, for folks like you who make their living speaking publicly, it's nothing. So when you're up there reading your own poem in front of an audience, it's a, you know, it's a challenging experience. But it's a very welcoming one. Everyone who gets up there gets applauded on the way up and gets applauded on the way down.
Cool.
And, more than writers, which I sometimes think are under every rock, the room is packed with listeners, mm-hmm. you know, who really are the important folks out there.
And they just have to get up there and read their words. They don't have to worry about acting and interpretation and anything.
No. Our only requirement is that it's something you wrote. You know, it's original stuff.
Yeah. Coming in May, we could talk about that. You have B.J. Hollers coming. He's been here a couple times. Interesting guy, nice guy, and he's a very passionate guy about what he does.
Yeah, and he is just the hardest working man in show business. This kid just, I don't know what else he does. Well, he's got, you know, one baby and another one on the way, and still he, like, puts out another book about every 3 months or so. Us older guys are beginning to really hate him.
His stuff is very interesting, what he writes.
Yeah, smart guy, good writer. Yeah, and a good reader, too.
Is he?
Yeah, he knows how to, you know, how to connect with an audience. That will be, I'm looking forward to that. I look forward to all of them, but I'm looking forward to that one. And I had him read one other time at the State Theater on, like, you know, the afternoon thing, the 5 o'clock thing we do on the third Thursday. So he read for about 30 minutes, and he knocked them out then.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to give him the whole evening at the library.
And what's the date of that?
That's the second Tuesday in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And, of course, right around the corner, as we talked at the beginning, Writer's Read is an open mic. It's Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, the 8th, and it's at the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library, lower level, yeah?
Yep, that is. And, you know, I just realized today, April is National Poetry Month. It's always in National Poetry Month. And then, of course, it always starts on April 1st, April Fool's Day. So I'm thinking that's not a coincidence.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we got off to a good start then. What time do people show up again Tuesday?
The read starts about 7, a little bit earlier if you want to sign up to read.
Thanks, Bruce Taylor. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Bruce Taylor. We appreciate it. Since we're talking jazz a lot today, renowned trombonist Delfeo Marsalis will host a jazz clinic at UW-Eau Claire next Thursday, the 10th at noon in Phillips Recital Hall. It's free, and it's open to the public. The St. Croix Falls High School Drama Club presents their spring play this weekend. It opens tonight, Thursday, with performances Friday and Saturday evenings as well. Curtain time is 7:30, and the venue is the St. Croix Elementary Gymnasium. Tickets at the door, just $5 for adults, $3 for students. Hey, Saints, break a leg. Friday, it's the annual High School Poetry Slam competition for high school students from throughout New Northwestern Wisconsin at UW-Barron County. And this year's edition of The Red Cedar will be released Thursday, April 24th, as part of that day's Thursdays at the U event, with readings by authors published in this year's rendition. That's cool. This Saturday, by the way, it's the Gospel Music Festival at Crosswalk Community Church in Frederick, Wisconsin. The Indian Head Barbershop Chorus and several very good quartets will be featured. Admission is a non-perishable food item or cash donation for local food shelves. You can get information at IndianHeadChorus.org. Wycliffe Gordon is one of the headliners at this year's 47th annual Eau Claire Jazz Festival. The other is Byron Stripling. Seems both have a certain reverence for Louis Armstrong, and both have an insatiable appetite for music and working with other musicians. If they didn't, they wouldn't participate in so many of America's premier festivals, one of which happens right here. Sometimes the trombone doesn't get a fitting place among the other brass instruments, many of which are more notable as solo instruments, like the trumpet in the background. But when someone the caliber of Wycliffe Gordon plays the trombone, it earns the best of reputations. Here's my conversation with Wycliffe Gordon. I perused your website and the On the Road segment. I was pleasantly surprised to see so many jazz festivals out there. Tell me about your fondness for those kinds of festivals.
Well, it's always great to work with up-and-coming artists because, you know, for one, there'll be the musicians that are going to be going to keep the music alive, but also a pool of new musicians that you can call on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's time to put a band together or to do things such as music prep. I'm meeting all types of, young students that are coming out, and the place to meet them would be at a lot of the festivals or sometimes the band camps. So education is something that I've always been, you know, fond of doing.
What does it add for you as a professional musician? Because most people are just out there playing their gigs and traveling and playing their gigs and traveling, but you get to sort of smell the roses. Is that kind of the way it feels?
Well, no, it definitely doesn't feel like slowing down and smelling the roses. I mean, the only way I slow down and smell the roses is to stay at home and, you know, not travel, because it all involves travel. So whether I'm playing gigs or teaching or playing and teaching, uh-huh. the fact that there's travel involved, there's not really much time for, you know, smelling roses. Mm-hmm. And even if I'm doing a residency activity, but I mean, the one thing I like to do now is kind of change the way that I travel. Rather than, I don't like to do one-nighters anymore, so if it's at least two or three nights in a place is great, because I get a chance to somewhat settle and, you know, relatively, it could be like smelling the roses compared to doing one-nighters all the time, which I've done for many years. So in that respect,
I guess it was maybe the one-on-one or the smaller group thing that felt as if it might be slowing down a little bit. Before we continue, I'd like to get to know you just a little better. I read you were introduced to music basically by your dad. It appears, because he was a classical pianist and teacher himself, that music was kind of tough to avoid in your household.
I guess I could just say that we were always exposed to music.
Yeah.
It was classical music at home, but he also played for many churches in our hometowns, but we heard gospel music growing up. And outside of the house, inside of the house, it was, classical music, or if we were listening to the radio, probably country music.
Ah.
So I didn't come into listening to jazz until age 13 or 14.
And that's at a time when you really dove into it because of a record collection that you had. Tell us that story.
Well, I had a great aunt that, you know, when she passed, she bequeathed our family her record collection, and that collection was a five LP set of, it was an anthology of jazz, everything from early slave chants to the modern jazz of that time, which included the Dizzy Gillespie Big Band and or the Sonny Rollins Quartet. And, there was Count Basie, so there was ragtime. There was the New Orleans style. You know, there was, you know, what they called Dixieland, on up to, bebop and whatnot, and of everything that I listened to. One particular side caught my attention, and that was the music that had the New Orleans music on it. Mm-hmm. Which included one of the Sunset Marching in, and particularly one tune by Pops, Louis Armstrong, that hot song called The Keyhole Blues. And I think I wore a groove in that record, you know, just listening to that side over and over.
So you found out what a groove was pretty early.
Pretty much.
Yeah, after talking to a lot of jazz musicians, that's just something that's there. It's something you feel, huh?
It is. The swing is a groove. Oftentimes when we say groove, we think it's like a funk groove or something that involves even eighth notes, something that's anything but swing itself is a groove. So.
Yeah. On the phone with us, trombonist Wycliffe Gordon. He's coming to the Eau Claire Jazz Festival this coming weekend. I read your older brother began playing the trombone, and that's how you discovered it. Does he still play?
He does. He just retired from the military, and he did not seek music out as a career choice, even though he'd gone to college and got his music education degree. He decided he didn't want to teach it. He went into the military, and eventually into the medical field, and he just retired. And now he's very interested in playing again, so he still has all of his instruments, trombone, piano, guitar, and he wants to record. Uh-huh. And, and just in sitting and talking with him, he mentioned to me that, you know, and in the midst of it all, he just forgot how much fun it was, essentially, to do music. So he's back into it. He's doing it again.
Cool. I always looked at the trombone as kind of an expensive slide whistle. I loved slide whistles when I was a kid. In the world of brass, is the trombone more difficult to learn because it doesn't have valves like other ones?
Yeah, trombone is most definitely the most difficult instrument of the brass to learn because of the range of motion. And and I play all of the brass instruments, so it's the one that's definitely been most challenging.
As a young kid, was it difficult to get in the trombone groove, so to speak?
I love to practice. You know, I found practice fun and not work. It wasn't a chore. It was something that I liked to do. So, I mean, you know how it goes. When you find something that you like to do, you do a lot of it. And eventually, if you practice properly, or you know, you really work on it, you get better at it. Of course, I developed some bad habits at first. However, I just continued, and I was in love with music, and trombone was the instrument. It became one of many, but it was my main instrument, my first band instrument. So I always stuck with that.
You play, you compose, you conduct, you arrange. I'm thinking that they're all kind of necessary to be a well-rounded musician. It's good to walk in another man's shoes so you can appreciate what it is they do. I'm wondering about the added empathy for what it takes to write and arrange a song. Does that help you appreciate what goes into one?
Well, of course. It's another way to establish your voice. The pen is something, to play. That's one way to orally make known what it is that your voice and what it is that you want to speak about. But another way to do it is to develop an arranging style.
Yeah, I was wondering if it makes you a better player, being also a composer and arranger, simply because you have that perspective.
Well, I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it definitely makes me more well-rounded. I mean, if you compose and arrange, it affects how you listen to music, how you play music, how you perform, and even how you teach.
Yeah.
But I think the more informed you are about music, the more you can bring to the table, whether it's from a listening standpoint, arranging, compositional standpoint, and even performing.
One thing I've learned from talking with musicians is that collaboration is like nourishment to them. It keeps you strong and keeps you the best you can be. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, I think so. I think if it's a great collaboration,
yeah.
I mean, one thing I always tell my students is to surround themselves with the best that's available to them, the best players, the best arrangers. I mean, because, you want to play with people that play better than you, that have more experience than you, to make you a better player.
Yeah.
So I feel the same way about collaboration. If you're going to collaborate with a dancer or a choreographer, you want to get a choreographer that has experience. And there's nothing wrong with meeting someone when you're both in the developmental stages and phases. I mean, I think that's great also. But I think that I feel strongly that if you get experience from being around the best, then you'll have an idea of what that is, and that's what you want to create.
And all the best musicians I've talked to always talk about paying their dues. In other words, when they were young and up and coming, they played every place and every chance they got. Was that you?
I did. There was a period when I did that. And I think it's great to get those experiences. Oftentimes now, it's difficult for me to go to jam sessions because I spent a lot of time years ago doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, now if I'm out of the jam session, I can't complete a project that I'm working on. I have quite a few projects that I want to complete, from film scores to setting up residencies,
Uh-huh.
And I think while jam sessions can be fun, I think at this stage of the game for me, I could better serve myself by working on projects that's going to yield something down the line, other than saying, well, I had a good night out playing last night.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I'd rather be composing a piece of music or completing a score.
Uh-huh. Maybe you'll trip over one, because the spontaneous jam sessions are the most fun anyway.
Oh, they are.
Well, you're a relatively young man. What's on your things I haven't done yet list?
Well, to complete my first method book. I've been talking about it for about 8 years now, and I have an introduction to it, so to speak. A book of suggested studies and pedagogy that I've developed over the years. That's basically the road that I've taken to develop my style of trombone playing, particularly music in general.
Well, Wycliffe Gordon, I thank you for coming to the Eau Claire Jazz Festival. I know everyone is looking forward to your visit and your guidance, and thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for having me.
The Eau Claire Jazz Festival, Friday and Saturday, something to do literally every minute, once a year, and it's all yours to enjoy. All the info you need is at EauClaireJazz.com. This is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us. Her name is Abby Gardner, as she's one-third of the Americana trio Red Molly. Angelic voices, very proficient instrumentalists, all combined in three lovely ladies. Coming up on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from the Water Street Deli in Eau Claire, offering fresh hummus, baba ganoush, and pita chips. Available at the deli, the downtown farmers market, and Just Local Food. on Facebook, and at WaterStreetDeliAndGrocery.com. Support also comes from XL Energy, actively involved in the communities they serve through support of nonprofit organizations, philanthropy, and volunteer work. Because there's more than one way to bring energy to a community. More at XLEnergy.com.
Thank you, ma'am. As I said, Abby Gardner sings like a bird. So do Molly Ventner and Lori McAllister. Their harmonies are tighter than a Las Vegas slot machine. They like what they're doing, and you can tell when you watch and when you listen to Red Molly.
I want to go all over the world and start living free. I know that there's somebody who is waiting for me. I'll build a boat steady and true as soon as it's done. I'm gonna sail along in the dream of my dear someone. One little star smiling tonight knows where you are. Stay, little star, steady and bright, to guide me afar. Rush, little wind, over the deep, for now I've begun. Hurry and take me straight into the arms of my dear someone. Hurry and take me into the arms of my dear someone.
Red Molly lights up the stage at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls Friday night, then heads a bit northwest for a Saturday evening appearance at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Abby Gardner called the other day from her home in New Jersey.
Why does it surprise me that the way you sound, you're from New Jersey?
Well, I mean, I grew up in New York, but it's pretty similar. A lot of people are surprised that we play kind of country-tinged music and are from the Northeast. But, you know, music goes everywhere.
I'm curious if you have gotten over the bitterness over the fact that the group wasn't named Red Abbey.
Yeah, definitely, especially since I named the band. So
you did.
I didn't want it to be my name.
So you just gave Molly the honor? Is that what you did in naming it, or what? It just sounded better?
Well, you know, Molly wasn't even in the band when we formed. So that was just kind of an added bonus when she joined.
Yeah, well, it sounded like it was tailor-made.
I know, it's true, but we named it after that Richard Thompson song where there's a character, Red Molly and James. The song is 1952 Vincent Black Lightning.
Did I read that this is your first time in Wisconsin? No.
It is.
No kidding.
That is true. I think it's state number 39 for us.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess I should say you don't know what you've been missing.
So yeah, we don't yet.
you do a lot of festivals and things that involve your genre of music, yeah?
Yeah, we do. We've been to Merle Fest, and we've been to some festivals out in California and Oregon and really all over the country.
Now, I read that you are 10 years together, but that must have been a different configuration.
Right. Laurie and I started the band 10 years ago with Carol Ann Solabello. She was our guitar player for the first 6 years, and then Molly joined about 4 years ago.
You know, though, when I listen to your stuff, and I did get the CD in the mail, by the way, so thank you for that.
Oh, great.
To my ear, melodically, this is like the trio that was born to happen. I mean, I don't... you know, you guys are so... You blend so well now. Did that just happen when Molly came aboard, or have you always had this for 10 years?
You know, we fell into a pretty natural blend. The first night that we sang together, it was actually at a music festival. Laurie and Carol Ann and I sat down and we just started pulling out old bluegrass songs and Gillian Welch numbers, and we just kind of fell into this harmony that stuck. And of course, it's been honed over the years, and I'm sure it's better now than it was when we first started, of course. And it sort of changed. But of course, when Molly joined the band, because she's not the same person as Carol Ann. But, you know, we've always kind of had some sort of magic with that. Mm-hmm. And that is a big part of why we want to do it, I think, because it just feels so good to sing harmony with your friends, and, you know, especially when it blends well.
Well, let me tell you, it feels good to listen to it, too.
Oh, great.
I'm always blown away, Abby, by all the music categories out there. I mean, I have somewhere in a file 3 pages of classifications. Now, your first pigeonhole is Americana or roots. You have bluegrass, Western swing folks in there. So I'm wondering, you know, when you write a song and it's finished, do you say to yourself, let's see, this one is bluegrass leaning a bit toward new acoustic and a touch of Tex-Mex country pop? or do you let others catalog that for you?
I tend to keep that out of the writing process, because it doesn't. When I'm first writing a song, I don't know what it is. I don't even know if it's a song. It's just kind of music. And later on, depending on how we arrange it, what instruments and what speed and all sorts of things, that can kind of change the genre. I actually have a song, an older song of mine called "Honey on My Grave," that started out very bluegrassy, very kind of down home. And then my dad made a big band arrangement for it. That's what he does for a living. So he took it to his big band, and I got to sing it with them. And it ended up sounding like an Aretha Franklin song, like very R&B. And it's the same song. So it's really interesting how you can kind of just sway that depending on who's playing it.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of fun to read about your dad collaborating with you on that one song. And, of course, I was listening to it on the way to the studio and noticed then that he plays the piano on the song, which is "Hello, Goodbye."
Yeah, he does. He's been a trombone player and piano player for my whole life and then some. And he's definitely in that the swing, old-time music kind of genre, big band and Dixieland.
What I like about the CD, too, is you have a little story under the number of each track, and you talked about the fact that your dad, Herb, got involved because you didn't have a melody. You came away with some lyrics and things for "Hello, Goodbye." You also talk about, I don't know what to make about the fact that you were gifted a dead fox. I'm trying to figure that out.
Oh, yeah, we were in Alaska, and it's just a different kind of world up there. And
yes,
we were playing the old Peggy Lee song, Fever. And mm-hmm. some guy just really liked it a lot. He left, and he came back a little later, and he said, "Foxy ladies." And he threw a dead fox onto our monitor.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, it was taxidermied. It wasn't fully taxidermied. It was still a little stiff. So,
Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, you get all sorts of adventures on the road. That was definitely a memorable one.
Wow. On the phone with us is Abby Gardner. She's the dobro player of the trio Red Molly, and they're coming to West Wisconsin. In fact, their first time to the state of Wisconsin. They're playing Friday night at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls, and they're playing Saturday night at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. So you're doing kind of the Falls tour of Wisconsin.
Yeah, apparently.
Which is kind of cool. Another thing I find neat is that out of 3 members, you have a bass player. Now, a lot of folk groups, that's Laurie, by the way. You know, in a lot of old acoustic folk groups, they had a bass player, but it was always the stand-up bass. And she plays the bass guitar. Bass lines, though, and a lot of folk groups don't even have bass. They allow somebody in the studio to add bass. But bass lines are very important to, you know, what you're throwing together. It's not nice to surrender them to a studio musician. They're part of the song from the beginning. So that to me is fresh, because your bass presence on your tunes is very much there. I like that.
Oh, great. Yeah, actually, Laurie started out on the guitar and the banjo, and she switched to bass just because when we realized our live shows just really needed that low end, especially with 3 female vocals, Dobro is kind of high-end. We used to have a lot of banjo in our sound, and that it's just too many high-end instruments, so getting that low-end is really helpful when we're in a live setting.
What's your history with the resonator guitar?
The resonator. I've always loved the sound of the slide guitar. When I was growing up, like Muddy Waters and Bonnie Raitt and that kind of the bluesy side of things, I love that sound. And I tried playing the bottleneck style for a while, but I started hurting my hands, so I moved over to the lap style, the Jerry Douglas bluegrass style. And that is really... That really resonated with me, not to make a pun, but it really stuck. Once I got to that, I was really interested in doing solos and fiddle tunes and just kind of practicing a lot. It took over my musical life a little bit. Instead of just backing myself strumming guitar, I really wanted to step out and take some lead breaks and things like that. Find out what all the fuss was about, all these guys in their basements practicing forever, you know, for hours on end. I wanted to find out what the fun was about. And I think I did with the Dobro. It's a thrilling instrument.
It is. It's a lot of fun to play. The album, the CD I'm holding in my left hand is called Light in the Sky. It's Red Molly. Are people going to be able to buy that and more at your concert?
That they are. That and two of our previous records with Carol Ann. And we also each have solo CDs. You know, we keep up that aside, and we're going to bring some of that to the show as well as bring the CDs themselves.
You also have an interesting guy opening for you.
Yes, Jake Armading. He's a great singer-songwriter of his own right, but he also has played fiddle on a lot of our records, fiddle and mandolin. So he's going to be doing both, opening the shows and also joining us to just fatten up the sound a little bit.
Oh, that sounds fun. Our audience has a couple opportunities to see you on back-to-back nights. By the way, they're just 84 and a half miles apart, just so you know.
Well, that's good for us. Not too bad.
No, you're hitting the Falls Tour, as I said. Chippewa Falls Friday night, St. Croix Falls Saturday. I urge everyone to subject themselves to your sound, either in person or recorded. The way I saw it, the first time I heard it, the word I used was fresh. And I said, you know, this is like eating a salad with ingredients just picked minutes ago.
Wow, I like that. We should use that in our press kit.
No, I mean, it really was. I was just totally blown. By the way, I have to get on you for this. I can't get Hello Goodbye out of my head. I was on a bike.
Well, I would say I'm sorry, but I'm not.
I was on a bike ride in the country the other night, and I kept going. It's there all the time, no matter what I'm doing. Luckily, it's not there when I'm trying to go to sleep.
But, oh, my goodness. Well, thank you. That's a good compliment.
Well, it grows on you, and I think it will. Abby Gardner, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West. I appreciate it. All the best in the future. Thanks for all the good work, and a lot of people are looking forward to seeing you and welcoming you to Wisconsin.
Thanks so much, Al. Thanks for having me.
One hello, two goodbyes, it's over. No more petals on my four-leaf clover. I can't take more this back-and-forth romance. He said goodbye, that's it, we're through. One big heart broke in two, but oh, we gave it our best chance. One goodbye, two hellos, he loves me. Thank my lucky stars above me. Why did we ever part? We're meant to be. Oh yes, it's true. There's no one else but you. At least till we say goodbye again. Well, it's on again. Oh no, it's off again. He loves me. He loves me now. Carousel of love keeps spinning. Did I lose or am I winning? How long can we play this game? We're meant to be. Oh yes, it's true. There's no one else but you. At least till we say goodbye again. One goodbye, two hellos, he loves me. Thank my lucky stars above me. Why did we ever part? We're meant to be, oh yes, it's true. There's no one else but you, at least till we say goodbye again. Oh, at least till we say goodbye again.
Red Molly, Friday night at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, Saturday night at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Tickets online, by phone, and at the door. Wow, love them. Spectrum Memo, the Sump, wow, let's start that over. Ready, go. The Soup Lunch Series continues at Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary in Sorona. The final program is Tuesday, April 8th, noon to 1 p.m. Registration is requested, but it's not required. Call 715-635-6543, or you can email them at info@hunthill.org. Okay, got a whole sheet of Spectrum Memos here. We haven't been able to get to too many in last week's shows. It's the 57th Juried Student Art Show coming to the Foster Gallery in the Haas Fine Arts Center on the UWEC campus. By the way, there's an opening reception this evening, Thursday evening at 7:30. The exhibit will be in place through April 24th. On the 140th birthday of poet Robert Frost, a discussion series is at the L.A. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire, Wednesday mornings, April 9th and 16th. 10:15 a.m., Wisconsin Poet Laureate Max Garland leads the analysis. All good stuff. Something happening all the time in West Wisconsin. Way to go, you guys. Next week, a 50-year search for an iconic guitar player. You'll hear all about it. Eau Claire North High School does a musical after 19 years. And more. Always more on Spectrum West. My name is Al Ross. Thanks so much for being with us. See you next week.